Welcome to the Evolution Exchange Nordic podcast. We're bringing together the best technical leaders from across the Nordics to discuss industry passions, challenges, and ideas. I'm Charlotte Roberts, and I help businesses thrive by connecting with top data freelance talent. And today, I'm your host.
We're going to be discussing managing versus leading data teams. So before we go ahead and jump into the questions, if everybody'd like to introduce themselves, that would be great. So if Evan, if you'd like to introduce yourself first, that'd be lovely.
Yeah, thanks, Charlotte. My name's Evan. I'm an analytics manager at Klarna currently, come from a consulting background. I've been with Klarna for several years and in Sweden for several years, but originally American. In my spare time, like a bit of endurance sports, before we hit record, we were talking a bit about some of the adventures in Sweden. I'm currently working through the Swedish Classic, a series of long distance endurance races here in Sweden. So that's me. Excited to be back on the podcast.
And thanks for coming as well, Evan. Thank you very much for that introduction. Kanner, if you'd like to introduce yourself next, that'd be lovely.
Yeah, thank you. It will be my pleasure. I'm an engineer manager with almost two decades of experience in commercialized product development. And in my current role, I oversee development of software applications, desktop, cloud, mobile applications, and AI platform for data-driven intelligent products. My mission is to support, empower my team, individuals, and I focus on their growth. Yeah, I have strong track records of delivering tangible solutions, AI native solutions, and I am founder of AI Community of Sweden, and I am the CEO. This community serves as network platform for professionals and communities that share these ideas and experiences. And I think it would be really fun today to have this podcast.
Yeah, and I'm glad to have you as well, Kanner. Thank you very much for that introduction. Fadi, last but certainly not least, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks, Charlotte. Hi, I'm an engineering manager currently leading the infrastructure and data platform teams at OneFlow. And for those of you who don't know OneFlow yet, we aim to create like the best digital contract experience in the world. What I primarily do in my role is work with, zero to one initiatives, identifying and executing things that create new capabilities, whether that's within teams or within like the technical space.
Nice. Well, thank you very much for that introduction.
Hi everyone, this is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
We'll jump straight now into the questions then. So the first question then is from Kanner. So Kanner's question is, how to establish trust with the data teams and colleagues from day one as a servant, humble and true leader? Kanner, if you'd like to give a bit of background behind this question, and then that I'll let everybody discuss.
Yeah, sure. I think servant leader is very important, and it requires to remove obstacles, provide necessary resources, and empower the team members. And I believe as a servant leader, we need to lean on the team, expertise, and encourage them to open communication. And we need to be honest when we are providing feedback. And we need to be humble. So there is a very difficulties when you are so humble when you are leader, I think. So how we can balance this between? And I think, as I said, we need to be very transparent when we are communicating with the team about the goals, challenges that we might face, and how we take decision. So it's very important to share responsibilities and spread out the, we empower the team. So I think it's really important to build trust from day one, and we need to be reliable. We need to deliver as we promised, and that was what I would like to emphasize.
Yeah, I mean, I especially like the concept around establishing trust with the team. If you're new, maybe you're new managing a team, or there's new members of the team coming in and out. One of the things that I really keyed on in what you were saying there was like the transparency aspect. And that's something that I've definitely emphasized in my career, getting really, really tactical really fast, using Slack as an open communication channel. So if it's anything other than obviously strictly personal items around maybe an individual, things like that, critical feedback, everything else we do, we build in public, in that open Slack channel, as I was saying. And I think that fosters a lot of transparency and communication and trust, because then people are able to engage with, you know, whatever I'm thinking as a manager. People can challenge or suggest other approaches, or even get contributions from other teams kind of coming in. And that level of transparency, I think, promotes a lot of trust, not only within the team that you're working with and leading, but also trust within the organization, right? Because others are able to stop by your Slack channel, stop by your communications, and kind of see what you're working on and see those deliveries that you were talking about as well towards the end there. So I really, really like that concept of transparency, and it's something that, you know, that we've implemented broadly, and something that I think about quite often.
Yeah, if I look at the day one aspect of the question, I would also really hone in on like the transparency aspect and really demystifying yourself, like coming in to a new team. Everyone's wondering, all right, who is this person? What will they? What changes do they bring with them, and so on? And instead of having them wondering about, okay, like what is in this person's head, you know, be very transparent about who you are, what your quote unquote worldview is, and how that permeates within your role. And you know, let them ask questions so that they can get to know you better, but also, you know, avoid the trap of just being the one talking. I usually use that tactic to talk first, just to make it easier for them to talk and be transparent with me. If I lead with transparency, then my hope is that they will follow as well. And just really listen to them. You know, let them tell you their perspective about, you know, how far they've come, the challenges that they see, and really be generally interested in what they do. Now the first hurdle here out of the quick honeymoon here is going to be, all right, what if you have different worldviews? What if you identify blind spots that you think are important, but that the team has missed so far, and so on? How do you tackle those? And you know, just the importance of communication and you know, having that open communication with the team to help them see your perspective and then help bridge that gap. But if I may just circle back a little bit to the concept of, you know, servant leadership, one of the things that I have seen happen is self-erasure, where basically leaders start leaning a bit too much into the expertise of the team and you know, neglecting their own expertise and neglecting their own roles. And I usually try to balance this in terms of, we have different roles, we have different responsibilities, we look at different time horizons. And we are all, you know, in this together. We are all here to win. It's just that different people do different things to achieve that goal.
I love that, the self-erasure. I remember when I was newer to management positions, had a particularly good team and a couple of skilled individuals. And I remember stepping away for a vacation, ironically, and I came back and I was like, wow, you guys didn't even need me. Like, this, everything went so smooth. Congratulations. I'm not sure what I'm doing here. And he looked back, as I'll never forget this piece of feedback. What he said was, yeah, we did great, but your time horizon was wrong. Give us 2 months and we'll need you, right? To set that direction, to set that vision for the team. And maybe that doesn't have so much to do with trust or transparency, but I really resonated with that. And I think it's a good reminder for those of us that are, you know, privileged to lead very, very capable and skilled teams.
Yeah, I think it's really important to be also be a role model for the team. That's why it's important to give some anecdotes, real life examples to initiate trust and feel them comfortable so they can share their own perspective and stories.
Nice. Yeah, definitely some really good points there. We'll move on now then to the next question, which is Fadi's question, which is what do you promote or optimize for in order to accelerate your team's development, and what are some practical methods you use to achieve that? So if Fadi, if you'd like to give a bit of background to this question, then I'll let everybody jump in.
Yeah, so the background to this is that we are in a position where we are pulled potentially in different directions. You know, C-level and the board might hold us accountable to results in terms of delivery, whereas we are also accountable for the well-being of the individual that we lead, but also the teams and so on. And how do we balance all of this to make sure that the whole is good? And how do we define basically that you know, what is good or what is excellent in that context?
Yeah, I think as a leader, we have responsibility for the team, and it's always very important to focus on team's development, individuals' development. And I think that's why I always prioritize a growth mindset in the team. Also, I think it's very important to have a very positive working environment. So I believe fostering a work environment where learning, experimentation, even occasional failures are seen as opportunities to improve. Most of the time, I think it's important to have one-to-one meetings to understand each individual's aspirations, their career goals, and their skills they want to develop. So we can allocate some resources and we can provide some courses, maybe online courses, workshops to support them on their journey. And it's also important to be part of challenging projects rather than what you do on daily basis. You know, it's we need to help people to leave their comfort zones and take a new challenge to develop new skills or sharpen existing skills. So overall, I think it's really important to have a positive working environment where everyone can share their thoughts and maybe internal talks, collaborative projects, and so on. Yeah,
I agree. I think this is a constant challenge for us as managers and team leads. One, you mentioned some tactical, practical kind of examples. One of the ones that I have used in the past at different times is implementing like a blocked calendar, like a section of the calendar for team learning. And that doesn't mean that you have to all do the same coursework or the same thing. But for example, we've had people at different levels of kind of technical competence at different points. And so we've been using that time to kind of push into whatever area is new and emerging. So maybe for somebody who's moving from analytics towards engineering, they go from SQL to Python, right? And then maybe for someone who's familiar with Python goes from Python to machine learning, right? And follow this logical progression. And that's been something we've kind of laid out these tracks. We have a couple of tools that we use for that. I mean, these are all this like Code Academy. These are very common online marketplaces for coursework, things like that. But I found that the really tactical piece is you block the calendar together and you do it together, and everybody is able to share kind of their results and their progress every week with the rest of the team. It creates a good environment where, one, there's no meetings or there's nothing coming up conflicting. And then the other one is that it's a little bit of, at least I think, healthy peer pressure to continue to push and innovate. And I mean, I do it myself, right? So it's a way of continuous development. This was quite a common thing when I was in consulting, and I've found since moving to industry, it's perhaps a little bit less common, so to say. You really have to seek out these opportunities for continuous learning and improvement. So that's one of the more kind of tactical things I've done to try and accelerate development within the team.
Yeah, I really like that, the calendar block. I think we're gonna steal that. I definitely agree on the healthy dynamics in the team and promoting constant learning. I haven't tried having the whole team sort of have their calendar blocked at the same time. I think that would create a very interesting sort of, like, as you say, like, positive peer pressure in a way. For me, maybe this is gonna be a bit of an odd detour, but I actually promote disagreements in my team, and not like fist fights and shouting matches, but really to have the team learn how to disagree, to escape first the polite phase when the team is new, but also to avoid falling into the apathy phase, where it's like, yeah, we don't care, whatever. Someone said something, it's sure, it's definitely good enough, let's do that. And really keep them in that, sort of looking for an excellent solution, position. And helping the team learn how to sort of, quote unquote, survive a disagreement. Because the first time around, it's not gonna be easy. It's gonna be touchy, but then after a few times, it's going to get easier, and it's actually going to be healthy for them to disagree and to debate on what's the best way to go forward. And one, I recently heard the term of having short toes, which I really like. It's an anti-fragility aspect. Like, we shouldn't feel like we're trampling on each other's toes, and that's why everyone should have very short toes. I really like that that imagery, actually.
Yeah,
that's great.
Interesting. Yeah, interesting to hear. But I think an alternative way of doing this is to spread out the responsibility in the team. So let's say at the beginning of the project, a team can do planning, the rest of the team can be involved, and at the right time, they can provide valuable constructive feedback as responsible people. And then we execute the project based on everyone's opinion. You can oversee the challenge and so on. So everyone has opportunity to provide feedback and input. So everyone is responsible from this. And it will be maybe most of the time when you involve in right time, you have chance to influence the project and then, of course, have opportunity to improve as a team, as a whole team.
I think one way that I've also managed to kind of have these sort of like disagree and commit, to use Amazon's like boilerplate, these kinds of discussions, is I came from more of an analytics background, switching more and more to engineering every day. And I've led teams that are mixes of analysts and engineers. But one thing that I often do is code review sessions. I'll put my own code front and center, right? And it's not the best code on the team, I promise you. So that's quite a nice way. I think it also goes back a bit to the trust thing from the first question. But these are really good ways to accelerate, my own development, but also the development of the team, because you get comfortable pushing back, right? There's no, it's a very flat structure, very short toes, as you said. And I think that it's a great way to work. And I really enjoy that dynamic that I've had in my team for a while, which I'm grateful for. So I appreciate the short toes thing, and that's a good one. I'm gonna steal.
I think it's actually one other thing that I find, since you brought up the mix of analytics and engineering, and to make this really relevant for like data teams, one of the things that I've observed is that engineering is not an obvious thing for data teams in general. I find that we often have to argue for it in a way, or make the case for it and why engineering best practices are good in the data realm, which for me, coming from a software development background, is obvious, but it's an interesting paradigm shift when you talk with analysts. Sometimes it's their ways of working are coming from the business, from the completely other side of things. It's not obvious for them at all, and so we have this mix of how do we work and get out of our comfort zone altogether, and build something robust.
Anything tactical you can share on that front? Because I think this is something that I've faced quite a bit. I come from the business side, and I'm every day learning new and fascinating things, engineering best practices, and stealing with pride.
Yeah, I mean, I would say one of the first things that I came across is that is the instinct to just, you know, dump all the data and then figure out what to do with it later. And that just, you know, that to me triggers all the wrong things, because essentially, you know, we all know it, like the more data you have, the more maintenance burden you have, and then you have no idea what's actually worth and so on. But then there's also really, like, you know, how do we make this into a science? How do we really make sure that everything we build is robust and will just be robust, that we have the time to build new things instead of making sure that the stuff that we build continue, you know, working well. And you know, there's a lot of, you know, you mentioned code reviews and all that, and everything that we do in terms of code pipelines in software development, taking that into data and just treating data projects as an extension of software projects.
Couldn't agree more. I mean, even simple things like using, a lot of times the business users will find, oh, I have this query that I use that's stored away somewhere on a notepad or whatever. It's use some sort of a GitHub or a repository to store these things, right? Because then it can be shared broadly and it's version controlled and all of these things. I found incredibly impactful. And they're not complicated concepts, but they might be a bit foreign if you're not, you know, coming from the technology side.
Yeah, exactly. And just building, you know, building components that then you reuse and build on top of, instead of like, oh, someone has their notebook there and then they copy pasted their code in some other notebook that someone else built something on. That doesn't scale at all in, you know, companies. It's good when you're doing prototyping, but then after that, you really have to, you know, structure it in a way that becomes, you know, an engineering project rather than just an analyst proof of concept. Mm.
Yes, now we jump in MLOps or ML in production. But I definitely agree. Yeah. I think well covered, well said. We need to avoid working in silos and we need to think from scratch until production.
But I think this is a good learning for anyone, right? Engineering, analyst, data team, ML, like, it's all the same process is one thing that I've realized, right? It's just the tools are a bit different and a bit more robust the closer you get to engineering. And I think you can steal so much of that no matter where you are, right? And this is going back to the question, which is acceleration development, is I love when these cross-functional concepts come into contact with each other. And this is one of the things that that I think really has helped accelerate our team as well, is just not being afraid to engage with these. With AI and with, you know, ChatGPT, you can put all your quote unquote dumb questions into ChatGPT and get a great answer back, right? So there's no reason, like the barrier and the friction is so low now if you just want to engage with it. I've joked with people creating the first full stack analyst that can go from, you know, understanding the data pipeline all the way through to an Excel output, you know, a model on the other end.
And if we are talking about scalable real life problems, we must use some sort of version control. And just to make up an example, if you are talking about a certain product sales prediction in 400 different locations, you need to have 400 different models and how to run this for one single product. Then you have maybe 1,000 of products. Then it is 400,000 different models. How do you manage it? How do you make sure they are taking right decisions? And what happens? Some of them starts giving wrong decisions, how to replace them with better versions, or so many things that needs to be handled with version control system. And from that perspective, it's same like software engineering. In the end, we use this version control for 4 decades, maybe 5.
I guess I skipped a bit over my day-to-day job in the beginning, but I work within finance at Klarna. So I work in the FP&A function. So I come from a background of finance and Excel models, and now I'm currently working on a project to completely redesign how we do all of our financial forecasting for exactly the reason that you said.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, we'll move on now to the last question, is Evan's question. So, Evan, what does effective leadership look like in this rapid evolving landscape of AI, and how can we adapt to remain relevant and effective? So, I mean, it seems quite self-explanatory, but if you'd like to give a bit of background behind this question, and then I'll let everybody jump in and discuss.
Yeah, I think that we've touched on some of these concepts already. But one thing that I find bringing on, you know, new team members is people are coming to market with increasingly technical skill sets. And that as a manager can be intimidating. It can be a hard thing to lead in that context, right? And the idea behind this podcast was the difference between leading and managing. Managing to me is very top down, right? It's about assigning tickets. It's about, you know, do as I say, not as I do, these kinds of things. Well, leading, on the other hand, it's easier with trust. It's easier with these concepts we've been talking about. And I think with that trust, there has to be a level of knowledge and a level of competence to engage in these topics. And at the pace of acceleration we're seeing, and the toolkits that maybe newer grads or you know, folks from other walks of life are bringing into the team, it can be intimidating and hard to lead. So that is that's something I think about quite a lot, and I've been pushing myself very hard to stay in the weeds, to get more technical, to get my hands dirty, and at the same time, not be afraid, like you said, Fadi, earlier, to set the vision for the team, to be able to be the one that interfaces maybe with senior stakeholders and can sell what the team is doing. These kinds of things, which maybe are a different form of leadership. But I'm curious how you are facing it, and maybe if you've had a similar experience.
I think you're definitely doing something right by trying to get more technical and you know, get your hands dirty, so to speak. What I would say is that you'll never be an expert on all the things that your team is collectively an expert on. That's a very hard ask, and it's also counterproductive, because then if you're the expert, then how are you empowering your team to make the right decisions? Instead, I would say, like, your main concern is the value that your team actually produces, and your time horizon is different than the team's time horizon. So when someone comes with flashy new tech, the main question you should be asking is, okay, how is this valuable for us? How does this actually realize value? Not the potential, not the promise, because everyone comes up with a brand new tech that has a fantastic proof of concept, but then falls apart after 5 minutes of examination. Yeah. I'm being harsh here, but that's, you know, the general gist of it is, you know, someone needs to do the legwork and actually show that this has groundbreaking potential, not just marginal increase. Because if you're also following marginal increases, or like very, very small marginal increases, then we're also getting stuck in migration hell. Oh, right, we've switched from this tool to that tool, and then from that tool to this other tool, and then we're not really gaining anything. You know, we're just wasting time. This is not, I feel this, I definitely relate to this, but also I think what's new to us maybe is the pace, but also that we're getting old. Like for me, like I was a developer, I've gone through this several times with new tech coming in and so on, and now I'm tired of this. And I know people who stayed in the technical roles are also tired of this. You know, I think if we focus primarily on, you know, what does this actually really do for us, at what time horizon, when is this technology actually mature enough for us to use it? Because we don't have to be, you know, the first people who use it. We need to be the people who use it at the right time. I think then we'll be, you know, paving the right way and really coaching the team to actually do that work. So not just them coming to you and asking, what do you think? Helping them at every time something new comes up, asking the right questions, helping them understand what are the right questions to ask and how to prod this new technology the right way, so that we can really tell if this is valuable for us. That is the way I would, that is the way I do it. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think I 100% agree with Fadi. as an effective leader, our job is to set a strategic direction for the team instead of being expert in a particular topic. And I think when we have more technical knowledge, it's very difficult to avoid micromanagement, because then you have opinion about the technical details and it might be perceived as micromanagement, and then the things go wrong. So I focus from operational details and try to see a strategic vision for the team. On as we talked, just to revisit, on daily basis, in short term, it's really important to have continuous learning culture where we can adapt new technologies and methodologies. But when there's a new technology, just because it is new, we don't need to use it. There should be a business value, a business purpose. And when we look at the commercialized products, usually we have like 5-year product development plan strategy. It doesn't mean something is better than existing feature in the product. It doesn't make sense to just take it and place. Maybe product setup blueprint is not ready to integrate that new function either. So there are so many limitations sometimes, but I think it's very important to encourage to learn the new, as we said, it's very important to gain new competences, and we need to trust and lean or technical expertise in the team as manager. So we, again, revisiting what we talk, we need to empower the team, but also we need to provide autonomy, give them the ownership and delegate the task. And when something needs to be changed, it's a new technology, perhaps we need to understand the business purpose, but it should come from our experts, not as manager from. I would not like to decide. And as Fadi said, it's very difficult to follow every single release in this time. We are getting old, but still we need to see the big picture. We need to focus on strategy and business purpose.
I would nuance that a little bit, because I just feel like there's the risk of creating a gap between sort of like, okay, all the things technical go to the team, all the things strategic go to the leaders, is that we end up in this sort of meme of politicians interviewing tech CEOs, and like, yeah, the internet is a series of tubes, and then we're talking completely different languages. I'm personally of the opinion that keeping a foot in the technical realm, at least to understand it and to really like have an informed view of things, is still important. Of course, you probably shouldn't go into like the nitty gritty of things. But my experience is that my teams actually appreciate my knowledge of the technical aspects of it, so that when they speak to me, they can speak with their own language to me, and I can follow and understand, and I can speak to them in their own language. But then also when we're talking about strategic decisions, then we really take it out to the bigger picture of value.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe something that you both relate to is, for me, I think it's important to have some background in the tasks of the team and the technologies the team is leveraging. For example, so to make it really tangible, we know with setting up a machine learning pipeline, the most important thing is the data cleaning, right, that goes into that. And if you don't have a great grasp of just how challenging that can be, having set up one or two of these yourself, or ideally many, many more, if it takes the team weeks or longer to do that, it might seem a bit strange. You just call this package and it runs. Why is it taking so long? Exactly. And in that sense, I think this is the thing that I've been really trying to engage with more, right? Mm-hmm. Is understanding the problem space as analysts and engineers and data teams, everything gets pushed more technical, the advent of AI and really finding use cases for these machine learning and AI concepts.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And in a scenario where maybe you're dealing with a skill set that is perhaps new to the team, then it's also quite important for you to have that perspective and to say, okay, like, are we going in the wrong direction on this, right? Like, the data cleaning is taking, yes, it's taking long, it should take long, but this is way too long. How are we tackling this? Do we need to readjust course, or is this normal? And having that perspective and having that understanding as a leader, I think, is still very important.
Yes, I think This is a really important point. When we look at the, as given example, data exploration part, one way to understand this is to measure the pulse of the team, right? We can ask in the team, if it's a common problem, it's already known by a number of people. And when it comes to back to, now I'm going back to the topic that we discussed when we are talking about new technology, implementing it in product or service that we have. I'm a little bit skeptic about new releases because usually they are unstable. And I give a credit to this because there are still so many companies using PHP just because it is quite stable. And when we look at the new type of corresponding things like PHP in the back end, it might be really unstable. So there is also a small trade-off. Yeah, what we are going to gain, what we are going to gain in case of business, in case of technical perspective, KPIs, performance KPIs, we can look at quality, we can look at time, are we going to have quicker product or service, and so on. Yeah, but I think continuous development is really important in the team, and as managers, we need to be forward thinking, and we need to embrace the technology also. Yeah, we cannot run away from it. Something we need a balance in somehow. Yeah,
AI will solve all of it, right?
Yeah, we will solve exactly. With AI.
I put myself write a prompt.
Scientist. Since I served as data scientist with PhD, I know what does it mean. Working on real life raw data. So, your example was well perceived. Yeah.
Nice. Before we end the podcast, I'd like to say thank you so much to all of our guests for sharing their thoughts in today's conversation. If you are hiring for a new technical role or looking for new roles, feel free to get in touch with us here at Evolution. Or if you or anyone you know would like to be featured on a future podcast, you can drop me a message too. I'm Charlotte Roberts, and you can find me on LinkedIn or email me at charlotte.roberts@evolution-nordics.com. Or visit us at evolutionjobs.com/essay. Thanks again to all our guests, and thank you for listening. We hope you can join us next time.